is sponsored by AFAIR, which is a group that does all kinds of apologetics for the LDS Church. Not officially for the LDS Church, but for the positions that Latter-day Saints believe in. And it's a wonderful organization. I have a great deal of respect for the people involved. They're having a conference on August 2nd and 3rd. Some amazing, wonderful speakers. If you are interested in going to the conference, which is on a Thursday and a Friday at the Southtown Expo Center in Sandy, check it out on their website, fairlds.org, fairlds.org. I think you will like it. It's something that I plan on attending this year, for sure. Now, on to the questions of the day. One of our listeners asked about the Anton transcript, and the specific question dealt with, if I might summarize it, whether or not we could really rely on what Martin Harris said the Anton transcript report was from his encounter with Charles Anton, or whether we should instead believe what Charles Anton reported about his encounter with Martin Harris. Now, the reason that Martin Harris's perspective has been called into question is because, according to our listener, Professor Anton was in a better position to understand whether or not what was written down was genuine or not. And it is true that he was in a better position to know, but as I'll describe to you, I think that actions speak louder than words, and motives are something that must be understood in this context. What do we know about the Anton transcript? What is the Anton transcript? And what are current scholarly views about it? That's really what our listener's question boils down to. An early copy, or what may even really be the original Anton transcript, is in the archives of the Community of Christ, formerly the RLDS Church. There are, I hasten to add, several different Anton transcripts. They were no doubt copied from some original, and the one the Community of Christ has may very well be the first and the original. We don't know for sure, but the paper seems to be of the same age. It seems to be of the same type as that used in the actual translation of the Book of Mormon, which lends credence to the idea that it is most likely the original. Joseph Smith described, to get to the specific question of what the Anton transcript is, Joseph Smith described how between December of 1827 and February of 1828, quote, "I commenced copying the characters off the plates. I copied a considerable number of them, and by means of the Urim and Thummim, I translated some of them, which I did between the time I arrived at the house of my wife's father in the month of December and the February following." Close quote. If you want to read that, take a look at Joseph Smith History, verse 62. Joseph then described how Martin Harris carried these written characters, the transcript, to experts in the East, where Martin Harris went, whom he saw, and exactly what happened are, as our writer reports, clouded in different contradictory reports, but we do know that Martin Harris stopped in Albany, New York, probably to see a gentleman named Luther Brandish, who is a New York State Assemblyman with a reputation for knowledge about the Middle East. Someone had referred Harris to a wonderful man by the name of Samuel Latham Mitchell, who was vice president at the time of Rutgers Medical College in New York, and had the reputation of being a living encyclopedia. He was an incredibly knowledgeable person, and accounts, depending on who you talk to, vary about whether or not Martin Harris saw Mitchell or Anton first, or whether he saw both. But the gist of what happens is that, according to Harris, he did see Mitchell, and Mitchell encouraged him to go see Professor Charles Anton, where a really important exchange took place. Martin Harris' account of his visit to Charles Anton was included in Joseph Smith's 1838 account. In verse 64 of the Joseph Smith history, he says, quote, "I went to the city of New York and presented the characters which had been translated with the translation thereof to Professor Charles Anton, a gentleman celebrated for his literary attainments. Professor Anton stated that the translation was correct." Sidebar here. It's questionable whether Anton could have known that. He probably said that, but it's questionable whether he would have known that, because no one could have really read Reformed Egyptian at the time, although perhaps Professor Anton could have understood by viewing the characters that they did in fact look like some kind of Reformed Egyptian. He was a man who knew at least seven different ancient languages and could have easily distinguished between things that were Egyptian, Chaldaic, Assyric, Arabic, Latin, Greek, and many of the other early languages. And so for him to say that they looked to him like they were ancient Egyptian is something important indeed. Then Harris says that he was given a certificate certifying to the people of Palmyra that these were true characters and that the translation of them was also correct. Then Harris says that he took the certificate and put it into his pocket and was just leaving when Anton called him back and asked him how the young man, Joseph Smith Jr., had found out there were gold plates. And Harris answered that an angel of God had revealed it to him. Anton then said, "Let me see the certificate." According to Harris, he took it out of his pocket and gave it to him, at which point he tore it into pieces, saying there were no such things as ministering angels. He then asked if Harris would bring the plates to him so that he could translate them. And he said that he could not do that because they were sealed and it was forbidden. And at that point, Anton said, "I cannot read a sealed book." At that point, Harris says that he left and went to Dr. Mitchell, who sanctioned what Professor Anton had said about the characters and the translation, according to Joseph Smith History, verses 64 and 65. When we come back, we'll hit the specific issue brought up by our listener, and that is, who's telling the truth, Professor Anton or Martin Harris? Stay tuned. We'll tackle that question when we come back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today on KSL. Stay tuned.
Martin Tanner continues on KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
We're back. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today. If you're just joining us, there are three topics that we are covering today. The first one is a little reminder about the upcoming FAIR conference, which takes place on August 2nd and 3rd. It will be a wonderful conference, and I encourage everyone who can go to do so. Check it out on fairlds.org, fairlds.org. And It's going to be a two-day affair on the 2nd and the 3rd of August, a Thursday and a Friday. There will be marvelous speakers. It will be fantastic. Today, we're talking specifically about two questions that I've received from listeners. One of those is whether or not we should believe Martin Harris or we should believe Charles Anton about what happened between the two of them in regards to the Anton transcript. Now, to recap, the Anton transcript is the writing of characters by Martin Harris and by Joseph Smith. Martin Harris would have written the translation, probably. Joseph Smith would have copied the characters from the actual plates and written them down. And both the translation and the characters were taken by Martin Harris to see Professor Charles Anton, who was at Columbia University and who was probably the foremost scholar about ancient languages in the U.S. at the time. So it was a good choice for Martin Harris to go see. From there, if you believe what Anton says, he said that what happened was that he was given a fake. And if you talk to Martin Harris about what happens, he says that what he did was give the characters and the translation to Charles Anton, and then Charles Anton looked them over and said they were genuine. So we left with this question: who's telling the truth? If you have a question or comment about this subject or any others, send me an email. Send it to martinstanner@gmail.com. martinstanner@gmail.com. I will be in touch with you. A clue, and I think this is really important, as to what happened between the two, and I think this is the most important thing because actions really are what to look for. Martin Harris was a pretty shrewd farmer and a business guy. He had a lot of money for the time. He had a lot of property for the time. Of course, he was biased because he was talking about his friend Joseph Smith, and he wanted to believe. But he also wanted to know what was true. He didn't want to throw his time and money away at something that turned out to be bogus. He was very interested in the truth because he was going to put up money and time, which were very important to him. Martin Harris would never have put up his farm and given the funds to Joseph Smith for the translation. He would never have mortgaged his extensive valuable farm to help print the Book of Mormon if he didn't believe it was genuine. So, if Martin Harris's version is true, then his actions are consistent with it. Charles Anton said that the translation and the characters were genuine. And that's what led Martin Harris to mortgage his farm and finance the Book of Mormon. If, on the other hand, we are to accept Charles Anton's version of things, then why would Martin Harris have followed through? If this was all bogus, if it wasn't really genuine, Martin Harris never would have risked his farm or his money. And for that reason, it appears that Martin Harris' version of things is true, because Martin Harris acted consistent with what he described. Now, another point here. Why would Charles Anton not tell the truth? Why would he say that these were not genuine characters? The answer is simple. He, as an important professor at a significant university who was widely renowned, did not want his reputation sullied by being connected somehow with what he perceived to be a bogus new religion. That's something that he did not want to happen. And hence, he had a reason to lie. After he said they were genuine characters, he had a reason to think differently about it because it would have been damaging to his reputation amongst his peers. So for that reason, there's a basis, a strong basis for believing Harris because he acted consistent with Anton saying that the transcript was genuine. And we also have a reason to believe that that Anton would have changed his mind because it would have been damaging to his reputation. All right, next question. And that is a caller's wonderful email, which says, how long did it actually take Joseph Smith to translate the Book of Mormon? This is a wonderful question, and it's one that is answered in some fair detail in the January 1988 Ensign magazine on page 46. So if you want to take a quick look at that, do so. It's quite a good article. But the short answer to your question is that if you deduct all of the things, all of the days from the beginning of the translation to the end where Joseph Smith was unable to work on the translation, then you will find out that Joseph Smith worked for about 65 days to translate a book that is over 530 pages long. That is an incredible thing to do. And it's something that someone with a writing history would have a difficult time doing on a word processor and a computer. And yet, Joseph Smith did so with no previous experience as a young 20-something-year-old without any kind of technology at all. He simply dictated it. He had never written a book before. This was an absolutely amazing feat. Absolutely amazing. Oliver Cowdery was involved in, of course, the writing of the Book of Mormon as a scribe. So was his wife Emma. So was Martin Harris. The Whitmers were involved. There were a number of different scribes, but they all described much the same process, which is that Joseph Smith would dictate exactly what they were to write. They would write it and then move on. The Book of Mormon was dictated in very close to final form, which is an incredible thing, especially when you look at some of the ancient words, the place names, and other things that are in it. It cannot be explained by any natural process. The Book of Mormon is a phenomenal document. If you take a look at what we're talking about, that's almost 10 pages a day, just shy of 10 pages a day. No one could do that, I do not believe, with no experience in their 20s, without divine inspiration and revelation from God. Join me next week. I'm Martin Tanner. This is Religion Today.